Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to the Brooklyn Buzz. I'm Nick Faye. With me, as always, Jack Manuel. Jack, sadly, another Nets loss today to the Nuggets, 108-102. How are you feeling?
Struggling at home, Nick. The Nets are struggling at home.
Yeah, this is three straight losses. Obviously, we talked about it on the previous recaps. They needed to get one of those games against OKC or Sacramento. Did not do that, and it feels like it's going to come back to bite them. Obviously, we'll see what happens moving forward. We're going to jump to that end plenty more. Make sure you check the Buzz on all streaming platforms. Also, give us a follow on Instagram at Brooklyn Buzz Pod. But, Jack, where do you want to start?
Nick, I don't know where we should start because it seems to me this was just a repetition of a lot of the issues that the Nets have had. The Nuggets bounce back after losing to the Knicks. They're one of the top teams in the NBA. But the Nets go on a little mini run, get it down to, you know, a six-digit game. But I think that the margin maybe flatters the Nets a little bit. How did you feel about the game overall?
Yeah, I think the garbage time kind of helped to get a little bit closer. And then when the Nets really made that push, the Nuggets pulled away. But I think overall, you know, the first quarter was a big reason they lost this game. Jamal Murray went off, dropped 20 points in the first. The Nets lost the quarter 33-21. But I think it's more so the lack of energy and engagement the Nets came out with in that first half. And you and I have talked about this in a lot of podcasts. This has been a common theme of a lot of losses is the Nets aren't talented enough where they can be lackadaisical or not play with full energy and engagement for four quarters. They really need to take care of business. You know, the margin for error is not very high with this team. So they have to always be locked in. And that just wasn't the case. And that's a big reason they lost this game because they were able to play pretty good basketball in the second half, but the first half really held them back.
Yeah, Jacques Vaughn, fellow Jacques, reflected a lot of the things that you just said there, Nick, and this is via Eric Slater. I think he said on where the Nets came up short today. I think overall you see the start of the game. I thought in our road trip we had great energy, great juice, and somehow we've come home and lacked a little bit of that to start the game. It happened versus Sac, and it happened again tonight. I think the starts of the game are important for us for confidence and setting the tone. I think early on they were the aggressors, and they set the tone of the game. So, look, Jacques Vaughn echoing your sentiments, get Nick Faye on the assistant coaching staff, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, I think of Denver. Obviously, the Nets beat them a week ago in Denver. They were going to come out aggressive. And as you mentioned, they lost to the Knicks last night. So they had a lot of motivation to win this game. Everyone's talking about them falling in the standings. And the Nets' best players just didn't come out. You know, Mikal Bridges probably had one of his worst first quarters as a Net, other than that Milwaukee Bucks game. And obviously, they looked to him to score a lot. And I think overall, looking at the roster in this game, not many guys played well. You know, you look at Nick Claxton, who had a really good game. And other than that, I wouldn't say anyone else played really well. A lot of guys played average or below average in this one, and some just weren't great.
It reflects the sentiments that we said the other day of like, well, if the Nets had had their good players playing at their potential up to their, you know, what we normally expect from them, then they get the Sacramento win. And look, you can't do that against a team that's second in the West and first in the West. You can't expect to play lesser unless you are lights out or getting second chance points or all these little things. And the Nets didn't do that either.
Or you have a superstar that can drop 50.
Exactly. None of the key indicators, none of the talent were able to exceed all of the little things that the Nets need to do to get wins on the board. They didn't shoot the ball that well. They certainly didn't rebound it well. All of the things that the Nets can do to impact the game positively. And as you alluded to, you know, Nick Claxton was sensational tonight. But, you know, outside of that, you know, it left a lot to be desired.
Yeah. I mean, Clax, that, you know, 4 or 5 minute stretch to start the third quarter, Clax was amazing. He was juiced up, playing with great energy on both ends of the floor, disrupting things for Jokic, catching oops, getting active in transition. That was probably like one of my favorite stretches of Clax this month. He was just really awesome. I think you look at Nick Claxton, and obviously he's taken a giant jump for where he was, you know, last two seasons in terms of his conditioning. But I think there's another jump he can make this offseason so that play can become more consistent through four quarters. Obviously, he played with such high energy, it's going to be impossible to play your entire, you know, game that way. But for larger chunks, I think he can take that next step in his offseason program.
Yeah, and he's doing this where the Nets have a key hole in their roster at the backup five. You know, yep. However you feel about Moses Brown, Dorian Finney-Smith at the five, you know, Ben Simmons in seasons past. He's been doing this on an increased burden that we've sort of said similarly when it comes to Spencer Dinwiddie. I think Spencer Dinwiddie's burdens are much greater. But Nick Claxton's getting, you know, the mid-30s now, the low 30s now, rather than those mid to high 30s we sort of saw when he was playing alongside KD and Kyrie. But yeah, 19 points for him tonight, 8 rebounds, 3 of them offensive, an assist, a steal, a block, 9 of 12 from the field, 1 or 2 from the free throw line. You know, that it was nice to actually see Spencer Dinwiddie and Nick Claxton connect on an alley-oop sort of play for once. You know, he's connected with every single other player on the roster, but Clax is just showing how much talent he does have, and there is plenty of untapped potential with him. You know, Mikal Bridges and maybe to a lesser extent Cam Johnson, and that's what you want to see out of a team that's going to be around the sort of middle of the range, is what can you get more out of the guys that have this maybe not superstar potential, but certainly foundational championship pieces potential.
Yeah, definitely with Claxton. I think there is still a glimpse of all-star potential there if he can just take strides forward in other areas of his game. I think also you mentioned, you know, the lack of backup five, also the lack of playmakers on the roster. You know, you look at Spencer, whose skill set should match up really well with Clax, but he just isn't a great lob thrower. And that's just a deficiency in his game because Spencer gets downhill really well, and you would think that set up a lot of oops. But he is, I guess, a little bit, you know, I don't want to say out of control, but the way he attacks the rim is with such speed, it's a little harder to throw those oops. If he had a better partner, you know, Claxton might be putting up bigger numbers. But I think you just love the fact he's able to find ways to impact the game and impact winning. Obviously, the Nets lost this game, but that stretch I mentioned, you know, the Nets kicked off the third quarter with a 7-0 run, and that was a big thanks to him.
Yeah, it was something like a 15-5 run or something around those sort of, you know, lines as well, where the Nets were able to get back into it, and Clax's impact, you know, was certainly felt. Yes, you know, Seth Curry, Daron Sharp, Cam Thomas, these guys were all insane in the plus minus. I think that's a little bit noisy, but Nick Claxton was clearly the Nets' best player tonight, and I think you alluded with the sort of Spencer Dinwiddie, Nick Claxton sort of connection. I think Spencer Dinwiddie gets tunnel vision, not in the way that Cam Thomas does, but I think he's deceleration isn't really there, and that's a skill that superstars have. You know, Luka Doncic, Ja Morant, these sort of guys that can go really fast and then just slow it down a little bit. You know, Chris Paul can sort of do that. Kyrie Irving can sort of do that. And it's not a superstar trait that Spencer Dinwiddie does have. But in saying that, I still think that he was okay tonight. He only took the 6 shots. But, you know, in talking about Nick Claxton again, I'm just loving what I'm seeing from him. His aggression, his ability to finish through contact, all these things that we would have never seen from him in seasons past. And it's good to see him. We always knew that he had this in him, but the fact that he's healthy and playing consistent basketball, and he's missing a game here and there for load management, but his availability is just so important to what the Nets are doing. And I can't wait to see how he continues to flourish as a Brooklyn Nets player.
Yeah, I think this was the jump we expected to see last season. Obviously, some health issues and some injuries kind of prevented that, and even just finding his role in the team, and maybe some of that was coaching with Steve Nash. And now Clax has really found his own, and I'm excited to see what he can grow into over this offseason, because I think there's plenty of more talent there, and there's plenty of areas to improve his game, even if it's just a little bit.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top 3 things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Nick, you put out on your timeline about Cam Johnson and some of his playmaking ability. We saw a little bit of it in that Sacramento game, you know, some ball handling duties, maybe more so than Mikal Bridges in some of these previous games. What glimpses, what little moments did you see that sort of gave you that confidence? And look, Cam Johnson hasn't been shooting the ball very well, which is, you know, it's a little bit frustrating for probably for him. And he did say so. I'll get to that quote in a little bit. But, you know, 14 points for him, 6 rebounds, 2 assists, 4 steals, a block. You know, filled up the box score, 5 of 13 from the field, but only 1 of 6 from 3. Did hit all 3 of his free throws. But that playmaking element, what did you see that makes you think he can unlock that?
Yeah, I don't think he'd ever be a lead ball handler or anything like that, but he could be a secondary or third one in a lineup. And I think he has the ability to kind of run a pick and roll. One thing he does pretty well is ends up getting in the paint. You know, he does a nice job of positioning his body. It's just when he gets in the paint, you know, he looks a little unsure what to do. You know, what's his go-to move? How's he going to attack the big? Should he kick it out? But you'll see a mix of some good passes in there. I think he has good size. And I think his ball handling is solid, but it could probably take some strides forward. But you see the potential that he does have. And obviously the role he played in Phoenix didn't really give him much opportunity to do that other than nights when guys were resting or injuries did happen. So I think there's room for growth for him in that area to kind of expand his game. And I think reps is going to be really important. You know, he was the lone starter that stayed in the fourth quarter for that little Nets run. And I think you saw some growth in terms of just experience.
Yeah, I think in saying that, you know, the handle is something that can be a key indicator of where a player does go. And you can see players get a tighter handle. You know, Jaylen Brown before heading in and finding his sort of superstar leap was said to have, like, you know, a bit of a lackadaisical, a little bit of a sloppy handle. And now he is, you know, borderline all NBA contention. And that's sort of like an underrated skill. You know, I think that we sort of go, these guys are 3-and-D guys. That's all we need them to sort of do. But as we've alluded to, we love guys that can just do so many different things with the ball in their hands. And Cam Johnson has a little bit of that potential. But on the game tonight, Nick, you know, do we get to Mikal Bridges next? Do we want to get to Brooklyn Bridges?
Yeah, I'll just one more point on Cam Johnson. I think obviously you mentioned 3-point shot is frustrating. I think he's still hesitating a little bit more offensively. You know, when we saw him, I think he went off against the Hawks a couple weeks ago. And in that game, he didn't really hesitate. He just looked really comfortable attacking and just going at it and being aggressive. And I think even just on some of his pull-ups, just playing with an understanding of what he can do on the floor. And I think some of his cold shooting has kind of interfered with that.
Yeah, he said this post-game about himself and the team overall. He said, the frustrating thing is when they don't go in. They felt good. I'm sure everyone thought they felt good today. They're just not going in right now. I can only speak on myself, but that's life as a basketball player. If it was easy, everybody would be shooting threes and making them. You got to weather storms and continue to shoot. But it's tough because I thought we had a lot of good looks tonight, a lot of good looks that just went in and out. sometimes games go like that, but we can't let it affect us on the defensive end and have to continue to shoot them when we get those opportunities. You know, he was one of six. Spencer was one of three. Royston Hill was one of three. Joe Harris was one of four. Cam Thomas was one of four. You know, Dorian Finney-Smith, 0 of 2. You know, the only guy that was sort of shooting the ball well was Seth and, to a lesser extent, Mikal Bridges. And, you know, the Nets, their game plan is, you know, put up volume of threes and hit a decent amount of them. But they only hit 12 of them tonight, and I don't think that was enough. And the percentage, you know, 34.3, 12 of 35, it's not going to win you many games, especially against a team that has far more talent and is a superior team.
Yeah, and the Nuggets hit 12 on 23 attempts at 52%. You know, that's going to make a pretty big difference in terms of the outcome of the game. I think also Cam could probably get that next level of polish as a shooter. I think just really tightening it up and just kind of getting to that next step that, you know, we've seen shooters kind of hit in the past. But Jack, you want to jump into Mikal Bridges?
Yeah, Mikal Bridges tonight, Nick, 8 of 18 from the field in 31 minutes, 3 of 8 from the 3, 4 of 4 from the free throw line. Did have the 4 turnovers, also had an assist and a rebound for his 23 points. Look, he's putting up 20 pieces like it's nobody's business, as I've said time and time again, but not as impactful. And did he get the looks? What did you see from him tonight?
Yeah, you could argue this is probably one of his worst games as a Net. Obviously, it wasn't terrible or anything like that, but the first quarter was rough. Couldn't really find his rhythm with his shot until later in the game. And I thought defensively, he had some mistakes that we haven't really seen from him. I thought he could have played a little better on that end of the floor as well. So just kind of an off night for Mikal Bridges, which is going to happen for any level of player, superstar, star, role player, whatever it is. Obviously, he's still kind of feeling things out. And I think just the overall team played a little bit lesser because he wasn't as good tonight, because that's how good he is and how much he kind of leads the team in a lot of times.
And I think bridging the gap, for lack of a better term, pardon the pun, between his best and his worst, like if this is one of his worst games, putting up a 20 piece on nearly 50% shooting and getting to the free throw line a couple of times and hitting some decent three balls, it's just that you want him to rebound a little bit better. You want him to play make a little bit better. You want him to be a bit better defensively. So I think overall, if this is a bad game for Mikal Bridges, you'd take it. But ultimately, you can't have your team's best player playing like this and probably expecting to get the wins, especially against the Nuggets.
Yeah, I think he was good enough to win, like for the Nets to win, if some of the other guys stepped up. You know, if Spencer had a big game and Cam Johnson had an average game and Dorian Finney-Smith wasn't bad, you know, that would have been enough for the Nets to win this game. But given how everything kind of played out in this one, it just wasn't.
Yeah, exactly. And Nick, which guys do you want to get to next? Do we want to get to Spencer Dinwiddie? Do you want to get to like the bench who went on a run?
Let's get to Spencer Dinwiddie, because I think this is part of the issue with Spencer, is finding the balance of him being aggressive and then him, you know, playing just a facilitator role. He took 6 shots. He had 11 assists, though. But on a night where so many other guys are playing poorly, this is probably where you want Spencer to be a little bit more ball hoggy and try to attack the rim and get to the free throw line and find those different opportunities. So it's a really tough spot for the Nets. It's a tough spot for Spencer. And obviously, that's been a big discussion. And, you know, sometimes I'd rather see him take more shots, even if he's going to miss them, because at least you know someone's trying to produce and trying to win. I feel like when he plays like this with a lack of aggression offensively, sometimes the Nets don't have enough production unless the other guys are playing really well, which they didn't tonight.
Yeah, I think what we needed to see from the Nets, and Spencer can really set the tone here, is aggression at the rim, as you alluded to, because Nikola Jokic isn't Rudy Gobert, he isn't Nick Claxton, he isn't Brook Lopez. And the Nets did that in their previous matchup in terms of forcing the issue and, you know, getting guys, getting the ball moving. And yes, like you had the 11 assists, you know, only the 8 points, only the 6 touch, as you alluded to, but it was minus 24 on the night, you know, was the worst player in that department. I think, again, that is far too noisy for me to sort of say Spencer did when he was the worst player on the court, but he certainly wasn't, you know, he didn't have the balance of playmaking and shot making that, you know, you want the guy who is your first, second, 2A, whatever you want to sort of call him on the team. So he could have set the tone a little bit better. His playmaking was okay. It's just, it's not all together just yet.
Yeah, it's like, again, it's finding the balance, and that's obviously difficult. And we've seen kind of both ends of the spectrum where this probably isn't aggressive enough. And then other nights, he's overly aggressive on nights where he should be feeding Mikal Bridges more. You know, I think it's just feeling out process for him and the entire team.
Nick, any other plays you wanted to really get into here? You know, what caused the run to get back? And then I want to have a very mini discussion about bring back the BS report for a little bit, because we did get some news in regarding to him. We saw a little bit of video here and there, but any more game notes, whether it's players, team overall? I know the Nets did rebound quite poorly. What did you think? What do you want to touch on before we get to the BS report?
Yeah, I think Dorian Finney-Smith's lack of offensive production sometimes is really going to hurt this team, especially when other guys aren't playing well. That's pretty obvious. And then you bring in Royce O'Neal, and he's not necessarily having a huge offensive impact. You're not getting anything from Joe Harris. Seth Curry comes in. He provides you a little something offensively, but a lot of that was still in garbage time. So, you know, I think, again, the main theme of this podcast is really that the guys just weren't good enough tonight.
And if you're not good enough, you're not going to win. It's as simple as that. But the news that we did get, Nick, was that Ben Simmons has left Clutch Sports and is at The Athletic's John Krasinski is saying that he's expected to hire Bernie Lee, who also represents Jimmy Butler, as his new agent. This little tidbit, we didn't really get a chance to discuss it. Obviously, it happened in the previous days before we got the chance to record. What was your reaction to this? How do you feel about this? Does it mean anything?
You know, I think you could look at it from both ends of the spectrum. You could say it means a lot. It means nothing. Obviously, there's a reason that relationship ended. We're unsure why. A lot of people have mentioned the idea of like Ben no longer being a great basketball player and Clutch not wanting to represent and not worrying about the headache that could potentially come with Ben Simmons. Obviously, that's an opinion. We don't really have much factual information on the situation. You know, hopefully maybe a new agency could help push Ben in the right direction, because obviously there's been some mismanagement of, you know, his health, maybe even his mental health. And, you know, that could be on the team, that could be on the agency. It's really hard to know. This is kind of more of behind the scenes stuff that we don't necessarily get full access to.
Yeah, you can look into it how you will. But I think that the fact that it is something, it's worth noting, it's worth discussing. The analysis that we can provide as guys that are pundits and followers of the team, it's like, well, is this, you know, as you alluded to, a Clutch thing, a Bend thing, a combination of both? But we also did see, you know, a little bit of practice video, and we did see Ben Simmons in this, and people were screenshotting. Shaq Vaughn has said that he still thinks that he's going to be back and he wants him to play. Like the BS report is, we should call it the boring report, because we're getting nothing. I think that the Nets should shut him down. It just makes no sense to bring him back for this similar amount of time. People are high on him. Like, let's get him back. He's going to be the playmaker that we need Spencer Dinwiddie to be. It's just like, I don't know, man. Like it's the boring report for me, not the BS report anymore.
Yeah, I think obviously, ideally, if the best version of Ben would be a huge addition to this team and really could take them to another level. But we haven't seen the best version of Ben in a Nets uniform. We saw maybe a small glimpse for maybe a 3-game stretch early in the year. But like you said, it's just kind of a waiting game and we'll see what happens. I mean, sadly, there really is no expectations for Ben right now to come back or produce when he does come back. It's more of just wait it out and, you know, just hope that it could maybe work out.
Any final thoughts, Nick? We discussed this little 4-game stretch being pivotal for the Nets and their chances of getting a 5 seed and solidifying the 6 seed. Have your opinions on that changed after tonight? Are you feeling less confident, more confident, same, in between?
Yeah, I kind of felt like this was going to be a loss, like I mentioned, I think, on a previous show, just because they had beaten Denver prior and they're such a good team and they were going to bounce back. I also thought they made a couple good adjustments in the game, and the Nets really didn't, and they obviously just played poorly. And those two losses, like I mentioned early on, against OKC and Sacramento, probably going to hurt potentially in the standings. You know, right now, as we're recording, Miami and Detroit are down to the wire. It's like a 2-point game with 4 minutes left. That's going to be pretty big if the Nets want to stay out of that playing spot. Obviously, Cleveland is going to be a tough matchup this week, and Miami after that. So we'll see what they do. You know, it's really on the Nets. And I think a lot of us are okay with the Nets losing games. It's more so, are they going to play with the right energy and engagement and give themselves a real opportunity to win? And when they do that, we've seen them beat good teams.
On to Cleveland.
Jack, always a pleasure. Big thanks to everybody listening. Check the Buzz on all streaming platforms.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.